One of the best-known poems of all time was written by a professor of Greek and Hebrew at Columbia University. History tells us that he started the poem while riding in a sleigh in New York City. As he was watching the shoppers pick up their last-minute gifts, he was writing on a piece of paper this poem. It tells us that from that point, he arrived back home and he finished writing the poem on Christmas Eve so he could read it to his children. There happened to be a lady at their house on that Christmas Eve. Her name was, let me find it here for you, Miss Harriet Butler. And when he read it to his children, she thought it was such an impressive poem that she leaked it to the Troy Sentinel, which was a newspaper at the time in upstate New York. And so it's exactly a year later, on December 24th, 1823, this poem found its way into the Troy Sentinel. The author, we are told, did not want his name attached to this poem because he considered himself a prestigious professor at a very prestigious university. But over the next decade or so, this poem found its way into every major newspaper, almanac, and magazine across the country. It wasn't till in 1844, when he was at the age of 65, that he wrote his own book of poems, and in that book was this poem, and for the first time, he attached his name to the poem. Clement Clark Moore was his name. The poem was called A Visit from St. Nick. You know it better as 'Twas the Night Before Christmas. The first line of the poem, right? 'Twas the night before Christmas when all through the house the stockings were hung by the chimney with care in hopes that St. Nicholas, you know it. Boy, I wonder if we could quote scripture like that, right? A couple more lines. The children were all nestled snug in their beds while visions of and Ma in her kerchief and I in my cap. Well, we had just settled down for a I tell you, when you read the whole thing, he's a genius. While riding in a sleigh, he's writing this stuff down. While going back to his home, he writes a poem that 180 years later, it is the most requested, it is the most read, the most memorized poem in all of Christian literature. In fact, Clement Clark Moore single-handedly changed the story. You probably didn't know that. The legend of St. Nicholas had him arriving on Christmas Day. But he single-handedly, through his poem, changed it to having him arrive on Christmas night. 'Twas the night before Christmas. Tonight, I'd like to talk to you for just a moment about the real night before Christmas. In the Bible, it talks to us about night and day in literal, real, physical ways. For example, in Genesis chapter 1, we can read this. God separated the light from the darkness. He called the light day and the darkness night. What I just read to you describes what you and I go through every 24 hours. Day gives way to night, and then eventually night gives way to day or the light. But the Bible also talks about night and darkness and day and light in metaphoric ways, in figurative ways, in symbolic ways. Let me example that for you. In Isaiah chapter 60, verse 2, we read this. Isaiah writes and he says, "Darkness covers the earth and thick darkness is over the people." Now, when Isaiah wrote that, he wasn't saying that people were somehow literally in the dark, like they were in a closet where there was no light. He was using it metaphorically to talk about what darkness represents, because darkness and light do represent different things. For example, throughout the Bible, darkness speaks to us about ignorance, blindness, confusion, despair, death, and even evil, to mention a few. Where on the other hand, light or day speaks to us of knowing, of being able to see, certainty, hope, life, and good, just to name a few. Now, you and I use these metaphors, maybe you didn't realize it, as we use our everyday language. For example, someone might say, "I was kept completely in the dark about that." Now, when we say that, we don't mean that somebody was stowed away in a closet. What we mean about that, when we use that kind of metaphoric talk, is we're saying, "I didn't know anything about it." On the other hand, we may say something like this: "Well, we've been going through a lot of things, but we can see some light at the end of the tunnel." And we aren't saying that we literally see a light at the end of some tunnel. What we're saying is that we have some hope for the future, that things are getting better. We can see something turning for good up ahead. If we were to rewind the tape of history back to the time of Christ's birth, we would discover that it was the real night before Christmas. In fact, if you were to study that period of time and what Israel was going through, you would come to discover that there was a lot of doom and gloom, even despair, in their culture and atmosphere. I mean, it had been 400 years since God had spoken anything to Israel. It had been 400 years since any significant thing had happened. Things were a mess politically. Things were a mess culturally. Things were a mess spiritually. It was truly night out. In fact, in Isaiah's classic passage, his prophecy about the coming of Christ in Isaiah chapter 9, this is what he says at the beginning in verse 2 about that moment in history. He said, "People will be walking in darkness." In fact, those that are living in the land are living in the shadow of death. We've been doing this series in our church leading up to Christmas called Unstable, and it's kind of been a play on words using the whole stable idea, but really what we've been doing is looking back at what Christmas was really like at the first Christmas. And the very first week we talked about this, we discovered that the times that they were in, the times that Jesus came to, were dark and unstable. The second week, we discovered that some of the characters in the Christmas story had some personally dark and unstable circumstances. One of the stories we looked at was the story of Zechariah and Elizabeth, and about them we are told that they had no children. And for that day and for that time, that was a serious cross for them to bear. Their circumstances were messy. And then last Sunday, we talked about how those that we read about in the Christmas story, how their hearts in many ways were dark and unstable. But what I want you to know tonight, what I want you to leave here remembering is this. Night cannot stop the light from coming. Let me just say it again so that you don't miss it. Night cannot stop the light from coming. Just like in the natural, we may go through just as we are right now, it's dark outside, but in a few short hours, the light will come. Can you imagine what it would be like if it didn't come up tomorrow morning? But the facts are that the night cannot stop the light from coming. In fact, if I take you back to that Isaiah 9 passage, I want to read for you more of it. This is Isaiah writing about what he saw coming in the future. It's Isaiah writing about how the Messiah, the Christ, is going to come. He said, and I already read this to you, "The people walking in darkness have seen a great light. On those living in the land of the shadow of death, a light has dawned." That's verses 2 and 3 of chapter 9. But I want to quickly move over to verse 6, where the portion we sometimes read at Christmas time, Isaiah writes. This is what he writes. "For unto us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government will be upon his shoulders, and he will be called Wonderful Counselor. He'll be called the Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, and the Prince of Peace. And of the increase of his government and peace, there will be no end. He will reign on David's throne and over his kingdom, establishing and upholding it in justice and righteousness from that time on and forever. For the zeal of the Lord Almighty will accomplish this." Now, when I read that to you tonight, you probably, most of you, have seen that on a Christmas card or at least portions of it somewhere during Christmas time. The reason it is referenced is because we believe this passage in Isaiah is talking directly about the coming of Christ. What you may have picked up on is the fact that I skipped a couple of verses between 2 and 3 and verse 6 and following. I skipped over verses 4 and 5, and you hardly ever hear them read when Isaiah chapter 9 is read. But this week, as I was reading them, I was like, well, I understand why they skip over, because I have no idea what they have to do with the passage. Because in verses 4 and 5, what Isaiah writes is, he says, when the Messiah comes, when the Christ child comes, it will be like the day of Midian's defeat. And then he describes in part what that day looked like. And I thought to myself, what in the world does that have to do with Christmas? And then I looked it up. I was like, whoa, there's something going on here. Now, I assume most of us in here tonight are not fluent in Israel's sacred history. So when I say to you the day of Midian's defeat, like me, I'm like, what's that? Maybe this will help you. It's the story of Gideon. For some of you, you may know a little bit about that story, or a little bit about who Gideon is. Now, the story you can read in Judges chapter 6 and 7. Tonight, when you go home tomorrow, you can get your Bibles out and read the story in its entirety. I'm going to give you the cliff notes tonight. This period of time in Israel's history was another dark time for them. It was another night for them, because they were being oppressed by the Midianites. The Midianites were trying to come against them and oppress them and overtake them. And God decided, he decided to raise up this man by the name of Gideon. Now, if you know a little bit about the story, you'll know that when God tried to tap him for leadership, when God tried to go to him and say, I want to use you to deliver my people Israel, Gideon's like, you've got the wrong guy. I am not your man. I am the least likely person for you to use to do what you're looking to accomplish. I'm the least among the people of Israel. I'm among the least of the tribes of Israel. He went down the list of what would disqualify him from being used by God. Now, we may look at it in the natural and say, okay, you're probably not the guy for the job. When God looked at Gideon, he said, you are exactly who I'm looking for. And you'll find out why in just a moment. So anyways, they decide to assemble an army. And when they do so, they count the number, and the number comes up to 32,000 soldiers. God says to Gideon, he says, that's nice. But he said, that's way too many. You've got way too many soldiers. In fact, what I want you to do is I want you to go out to the 32,000, and I want you to say to them, if anybody is afraid to go into battle, you're welcome to go home. And on that day, 22,000 left the battle force. So we're down to 10,000 people. God says to Gideon, that's still way, way, way too many soldiers. He said, he devised a scenario by which he kind of separated some more out. And so when it came down to it, there were 300 and 9,700. Now, one would think, in the natural anyways, that you would want to stick with the 9,700, right? If I'm going into battle, I want the 9,700, but God said, no, I'm going to use the 300. You can tell the rest of them to go home. Now, that only makes any sense if you know the size of the force that you're going up against. For instance, you could have 300 people, but if you're going up against 300 people or 400 people or 500 people, you might stand a chance, right? But it tells us in that passage that Gideon went out and he looked into the valley where the Midianites had assembled for battle. And it says that they looked like a swarm of locusts. There were so many soldiers. In fact, in talking about their camels, they said there were so many camels, it was like trying to count the grains of sand on the seashore. In chapter 8, we find out a pretty close number to what they were dealing with. 135,000 soldiers. I'm getting to the Christmas part in all this, right? Hang in there. Now, when Israel started out in this moment with 32,000, it was 4-1 odds. 4 Midianites for every Israelite. But God, in whittling things down, whittled the odds down to 450-1. Those were the odds. Now, to make matters even more lopsided, God says, Gideon, I've got another brilliant strategy. We're going to do this at night. Now, if you know anything about warfare, maybe not so in our day and age with all the night vision and all that stuff going on, but in those days, the least likely time you want to try to pull off a maneuver is at night because of why? You can't see. So he says, we're going to take these 300 people and we're going to go down and beat the Midianites in the night. Now, to make this a little even more lopsided, instead of me giving you swords, knives, and chariots, for your battle armament, I'm giving you clay pots, tiki torches, and a ram's horn. Like, Gideon's got to be thinking, how did I get myself into this, right? I am going up this swarm of an army, more camels than we can count, and you're sending us out there with a clay pot, tiki torches, and a ram's horn. God said, yep, that's all you're going to need. So as the story goes, they go down, and it says to us, they surround the Midianites. And on God's cue, they were called to smash their clay pots, shine their lights brightly, and blow their trumpets or ram's horn, and shout, for God and for Gideon. And the story goes that when that happened, the Midianites got confused. They got thinking that something was happening that wasn't happening. And instead of attacking the few men of Israel, they started coming against each other. And for whatever ones didn't get killed in that moment, the rest of them fled for their lives. Now, I'm telling you that story because it's in the Christmas story. And I'm thinking to myself, what does that story in Isaiah's account of it have to do with the Christmas story? And then I thought of it. The darkness cannot stop the light from shining. God said, all you need is some brightly lit torches, and this battle is yours. Because the whole point was to get the thing so lopsided that nobody could come away and take credit for it but God. You see it? He picked the least likely leader, put together a ragtag army, gave them some clay pots, a tiki torch, and a ram's horn. The only way darkness, bad stuff, God's saying, the only way, remember, the zeal of the Lord will accomplish this. That's what Isaiah wrote. The zeal of the Lord will accomplish this. You know, I was reminded when I thought about that, when I realized what the story was about, I immediately thought of what John's version of the Christmas story is. In John chapter 1, John writes and he says, the light came into the darkness, and the darkness was not able to overcome it. You get it? Just like on the day of the Midianite defeat, the light came into the darkness, and the darkness was not able to overcome it. Jesus later said, he said, I am the light of the world. And whoever walks in me will never walk in darkness. Now, as we are here tonight, I think we can all agree that 2020 will probably go down as one of the darker years in our country's history. But I might add, not just our country's history, the world's history. It's been a dark year. Can we agree on that? There's been some yucky stuff going on. There's kind of a mess out there in case you haven't looked lately. You know, parted your curtains and looked out, it's a bit of a mess. What I want you to walk away with tonight is that even though it may be night, the night cannot stop the light from coming. The night cannot stop the light from coming. Tomorrow morning, when you wake up, now you may wake up and it may still be dark out. That's the time of the year we're in, right? Especially you little ones. You're going to want to wake up early tomorrow morning and it's still going to be dark out. But I promise you, if you wait long enough, if you just hang in there, the light will come. Because the darkness cannot stop the light from coming. Jesus said, I am the light of the world. Anyone who walks in me will never walk in darkness. You got it? The very first sermon Jesus ever preached in Matthew 4, he stood up with the people who were assembled there, and guess where he quoted from? Isaiah chapter 9. This was his opening message to people. And he quoted an Isaiah and said, people are walking in darkness, but a light has come. People who are walking in the shadow of death, a light has dawned. He's obviously referencing himself. But listen, tonight, as I light this center candle to represent Christ being the light of the world, that light right there, or Christ being the light, only has any significance or meaning or application in our lives if we, first of all, receive the light. We come to the light and receive the light. Let me just say this. The light of Jesus is shining out there brightly for all to see who want to see it. But it only has relevance if you choose to come to the light. And then it only has, even for us as believers, as Christians, it only has significance or relevance is if we wake up every day and choose to walk in the light. Like any of us can wake up every day and choose to walk with our eyes on the darkness. We can do that. Any of us can. Oh, it's so dark out. It's so gloomy out. It's so bad out. COVID and elections and, you know, it's just horrible out there. Listen, the light is still shining. You know why? Because the darkness cannot stop the light from shining. That's how it works. Tonight, I realize that you may be here and you may feel like these are seriously dark times that we're in. You may be here and you have some personal circumstances or some personal things that feel or seem dark to you in life. You may be here and your heart is full of discouragement or even despair. But I'm here to tell you tonight, despite the things going on, despite your circumstances, despite your own heart, the light of Christ is shining brightly. You just need to receive the light. You just need to walk in the light. Remember, I told you that metaphorically, light references hope, life, salvation, certainty. Tonight, I want to leave you with the encouraging note that the light of Jesus Christ has never gone out. Remember what I read? That he would come and establish his kingdom and that there would be no end. No end. It's not like it stopped shining somewhere along the way and we've got to wait for him to come and light it up again. It's still shining. I think he's going to come with a great flash. But in the meantime, the light is still shining in the darkness. You and I just need to come into the light. I want to pray this evening. We are personally aware of some people going through some dark things. And I'm sure there are some of you here that are frustrated and wished it was brighter out. I just want to pray that God would shed his light abroad in your hearts. That you would know that this moment that we're walking through right now, being reminded of Christ coming again, it isn't just for us to somehow, light a few things up and open up some packages and so forth and so on. This is about being re-immersed in the light of life. About letting his light so ignite the our hearts again that we are, we would be like, if you would, like on fire because of Jesus. Lord, I thank you for coming. I thank you for demonstrating your zeal to Israel way back there in the day of the Midianites' defeat, Lord. But I thank you that got updated when you came on Christmas, that you came once and for all to settle this issue of darkness and light. That you came not just as the light yourself, but you came to make a deposit in each of us so that we could be full of life and hope, even in the midst of the darkness. So I pray right now, Lord, for any who are struggling just to kind of keep their head above water, I'm praying that you would light up their hearts tonight. You, the light of the world, as they would come to you, as they would, in just a moment, we're going to be lighting our candles. But Lord, figuratively, as we extend the candle of our heart towards you, Lord, would you, from your light, light our lights? Would you take us out of those places of despair and frustration? to being fully aware that even though it's dark, even though it's night, we are walking in the light. And the night cannot stop the light. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.